You're on.
Okay. Good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak. We're back at the Public Service Commission. It's 11:15. We're gathered for the admin portion of our regularly scheduled commission meeting. I call this to order. We have one item on consent. I move passage of that item.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for further discussion. Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All righty. Thank you, Daryl. Moving on to discussion matters. The first item is proposed updates to construction inspection contract and certification of order provision templates. Julie, I don't remember what we were talking about here. Is this mostly the certification of the order?
Yes, these are the certification changes that, and I also have a copy of the Bridger construction inspection contract where we made the changes from the old contract.
We already talked about that one, though, didn't we?
We were going to bring it in front of the commission, the other commissioners, to see if they had any thoughts.
No, we did that the last time we approved it, didn't we? Yeah, we did that at the special meeting.
At the last meeting, it was a special meeting, actually. The commission approved a contract which had some changes to the language regarding topsoil-subsoil segregation. And at that meeting, you were wondering if we had if we were implementing the stop work authority for construction inspectors. And so we started thinking about that and how we might implement that. And we visited with Jack about how the best approach for that, and his response was he felt that it needed to be in the certification to order provisions so that we could have authority in that situation if the inspector needed a stop work authority and the company disagreed, we would need some authority in it. So we're proposing some changes here that do that.
Okay.
And a couple other things that we've been talking about over time are on here, and we just thought we'd present this, and perhaps the commission would like to have a little work session on it. Or
okay, so just so I understand, we've got the document you just handed out, Julie, is proposed changes to the certification document.
Yes.
And then there are no additional changes to the construction inspection contract.
Not at this time.
Okay. All righty. Do you guys want to talk through these right now, or do you want a separate work session?
I'm fine with this right now, Julie, because I really think that I trust you on this, and we've talked a lot about it. These look to me to be, I would say, happy to glad changes, quite honestly. Shall, must, okay, fine. I mean, I think the intent is just is the same.
So we're just basically describing what we mean in more detail on how they should be segregating the topsoil and the subsoil, right?
That's in part, yes. Mm-hmm.
Topsoil. Oh, and here, the other key thing here, this is the big deal. Topsoil shall be removed before the topsoil freezes in late fall, early winter, and topsoil removal shall not resume until saw. So basically what that changes will... They can still do winter construction, but they have to have all their stuff, their topsoil and subsoil, done ahead of time. That'll be a big change.
Well, it will be, and not always a good one, so we need to be prepared to exempt that part of it. There are some situations where they have specifically designed equipment for this purpose, where they mill it and such, and we had that one project that went from Kildare South that specifically designed their project around the concept of winter construction, but they had the equipment to do it and did not. This was before we came on board, but isn't that Alliance Pipeline? Wasn't that specifically designed to be a winter construction project in parts of it? Because of the lay of the land or the soil conditions or something. I mean, there are just times when I think this is going to have exceptions to it.
Well, and that's something that we should probably talk about. I don't know about specifically designed, or once they realized there was no other alternative to getting it done, they designed it so they could construct it during the winter, but and get that equipment, et cetera. But, you know, in talking with Jim upstairs, they even require that the topsoil and the subsoil is done, is segregated before it freezes, because it's just really hard to do a good job of it once it freezes. So by putting this in there, we're sort of saying, embracing that concept that this is the best way to have a good outcome, and there are few exceptions to the rule that, you know, you should be constructing out there in the winter. So what I'm hearing is you're not there yet.
I'm kind of going, I wasn't necessarily expecting this, but it seems to me there was, that it was deemed quite an accomplishment, and I don't really know the details of why anymore, some years ago, and I'm imagining that maybe the fact that it was kind of wetter land, and so they're able to go through, and by doing it when the ground beside the easement was frozen, they didn't tear everything up, or maybe it had to do with the crops that are seeded there. But it just seems to me that that was emphasized, that that was one of the hallmarks of a specific project, that they specifically did it in the winter.
Why don't we get some more information? Because this is a significant change. I don't want to do it, you know, without fully contemplating it, because we'll end up having to backtrack if the industry has some legitimate concerns about what we're doing. So let's just hold off. Let's have a work session that we schedule on this, and we can gather some more information.
Not to be lost here, though, is in almost all the cases that we've handled in these over 2.5 years, though, I like this.
Right. Well,
but I just don't want to have something so set in stone that it...
Well, and it can leave it to each order, too. I mean, it's...
I think that the winter construction issue is a bigger issue, so that one we should for sure talk about at a work session. But I think the final one, company understands and agrees that the commission's third-party inspector has stop work authority in the event of a probable violation of the siting laws, rules, commission orders. That seems reasonable to me.
I do, too.
Brian?
Yeah, that's
fine. So I think you should go ahead and... implement that one, that change. And I think the one right above it, that they can't begin before the commission's third-party inspector is present at the project site, that one we should implement right away, too. And we have to make darn sure that those contractors, though, the third-party contractors, aren't holding up the companies. So I don't know how we assure that. But that's we can be guaranteed that we'll get a lot of pushback on this if that starts happening. So maybe we'll need to emphasize that in our contract selection. And then the ruts, let's see.
Should we have a provision in there where if our inspector isn't showing up when they were supposed to, that they can call us and just get a interim approval, and that we can go ahead with it. I can imagine some contractors just being wild out there when they've got all their equipment and all their people out there, and our guy didn't show up.
I would assume that this is really determined and decided at the pre-construction conference, that they will set, like, here's the date and here's when we're going to all be there. So we shouldn't have. Maybe you should just say that. Company understands agree that it must not begin before the commission's third party is present on the date selected at the construction and pre-construction conference, so that everyone knows that there's a time certain.
That's an improvement.
Okay. Present at the project site on the date selected. Okay. And then the ruts. Let's talk about the ruts during the winter construction issue as well. Okay. Thank you, guys, for continuing to push that forward. Quest complaints. This should be CenturyLink complaints. I'm still, even though I'm a customer of theirs, I still consider, I can't get the name right. I had said for myself when we were working with Stacy on these things back in August that if the company hadn't made some considerable progress by Labor Day, that I felt we should be moving forward with the formal complaint process somehow. I'm just wanted to put this out there to see what's going on and see where we're at, if that's happening, if we're not doing it for some reason, if we've gotten new information, whatever it is that suggests that maybe there isn't the need for a complaint, or if I just throw it out here for discussion.
Well, I'll take some responsibility of I don't know exactly where staff would be at this point on it by now, but I've probably slowed things down, you know, over the course of, I don't know, a year or a half a year, whenever we started talking seriously about some of the problems that we've had in Quest areas, but primarily around that Belfield and Fairview area. You know, one of the things that we heard from Quest was that although it's kind of Quest, too.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's the official
company. Oh, okay. I don't feel bad then.
You can't hardly go wrong. But one of the things that we heard from that provider was that, you know, like so many out in the oil patch, they're having trouble getting employees. They wanted to do some work, but they couldn't find anyone. And they had one of their employees passed away, and so there's that opening and such. And in the last, I'm not sure the time frame, a couple months, they were able to fill that position. They have also added two contract workers that are spending a good part of their time out there. And so I had communicated to staff that I wanted to just kind of let things play out a little bit here during these autumn months when a lot of work could be done, and see how well they do at catching up with the additional people they have.
Yeah, can I just throw a thought out here? To me, the elephant in the room is this commission willing to set up a standard of service? Because we could have filed a complaint, and then they'd come in and they'd tell us what they're doing, but we've got no standard to hold them to. And so I'm certainly willing to open up that discussion about a service standard as we get forward to the complaint, but maybe staff can jump here in a little bit. But isn't that kind of the big thing, that what would we hold them to? Because previous commissions have tried to do something with that but never really did anything with it. And isn't that kind of the big challenge?
Staff, in this situation, is doing an investigation, and we're going to be eventually we'll be consulting with a staff advocacy attorney to determine if we have a case to proceed.
Fair enough. But hasn't that been the challenge in the past, is that there's nothing to hold them to because we don't have a standard?
We currently have no standards in our rules. We have the authority, but we haven't adopted any rules for standards, right? Telecommunications standards.
But I'm just saying, I'm the customer out there who doesn't have service. Surely there's a standard that they have to have service. They're paying for it.
For how many hours?
That I will not ever repeat that to a customer. I won't do it. It's not reasonable. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I'm willing to go forward with the discussion about a standard. And that's what we could do this now going forward, because the previous commissioners weren't willing to do that. But I'm willing to say that you should have to have service 75% of the time or 90% of the time. That's what it'll come down to.
Well, and I think we should work that out through the process of the complaint if we need to. But if things are getting better, that's awesome. But things were not getting better. And I just am not comfortable telling these folks who have no other options that we can't do anything, because I think we can. So, I mean, whatever, we may not have tons of tools, but whatever tools we have, we should be using them. To try to get this service improved. So, Stacy, are you hearing a lot less? Are they making progress?
I still get outage calls from those areas: Fairfield, Cartwright, Fairview. It seems like they're getting to the repairs a little quicker, and by a little quicker, I mean it still takes a week to 2 weeks, as opposed to 6 to 8 weeks. The problem is that the ones that I deal with are recurring. So they're out for 2 weeks, and then they fix them, and then they're good for a week, and then then it rains, and I get a phone call, and they're out again. And then so it's just these areas with the old lines It's just I keep hearing from them over and over and over, and they keep having to go out and do the fixes. I also know that I don't hear from a lot that are out because they'll say to me, well, all of our neighbors are out too, and I'll only hear from one of them. So they maybe are getting to the fixes a little faster, but the recurring outages keep happening in those areas, I think, just from the infrastructure.
I get worried if there's an emergency and somebody doesn't have service. And then here we've been sitting.
What's the process, if I could? Because I agree with your frustration, Julie. There's no question. But the the commissioner can say, I want to complain, or staff can file it. But so what's the process going forward? Do you have to, if the commission doesn't give you firm direction, you file the complaint, and then we have to deem it complete, and there's prima facie. I mean, what's the process to officially do it without a commissioner saying, do it?
You do it.
I'm thinking, is it like a call before you dig where you guys file it, and then we say yes and set a hearing date?
The normal process is that staff, in the normal course of business, is learning about things that may or may not constitute violations of laws or rules. We do not have specific rules that says your phone has to work 75% of the time, but that does not mean that we don't have a standard. And when you get to a discussion of a standard, you are getting into the merits of the complaint proceeding, and it's probably not an appropriate discussion in the same meeting as discussing the complaint proceeding, because it will be the proof that you will see or not see in that proceeding that will tell you if you have a standard or not. Now, we have
done the process. I mean,
yeah.
The
staff has to investigate and determine if there's enough evidence. One of the things we said in this case is that we need that legal advice, that advocacy legal, helping with that investigation, perhaps doing interrogatories or depositions to get more facts. Once that's all put together, the staff, assuming they find enough to file a complaint, will file. Then the commission says, yes, it states a prima facie case, schedules it for hearing. And then you have a hearing on those facts and what standard the company should be held to.
And if the staff decides they don't feel a prima facie, they don't feel there's enough, one of us can still say, we're going to file a complaint.
Right. And
you can have that. Hearing here that staff's got X amount of time to work with the portfolio holder, and if they do it, then do it. Otherwise, you'll see one of the commissioners bring something forward.
Right, which is sort of where we were, and then it kind of got pulled, in my mind, pulled back. We were going to get, Mitch is ready to take the case as advocacy staff, and the motion was on the agenda, but it got withdrawn. My advice is that you don't have staff do a ton of work without that advocacy lawyer, because there's a lot that advocacy lawyer has to contribute to this investigation. But if you hire an advocacy lawyer, you will have a bill to send to the company. That's how it will get paid for.
And is that that's a process that's available to us?
There's a mechanism to recover costs for telecom. So to me, that's a step that we should do no matter what. And then we can, until we get that taken care of, then whether the staff brings it or the commissioner brings it, but that's got to start.
Well, you know, I would say, you know, we are getting to the end of a normal construction type season. I think, you know, if a case is ultimately brought, it's going to be stronger in that, based on the previous discussions we had where they were trying to hire some additional employees. Now, they did hire, an employee and two contract people, to be accurate, I guess. But they have had some time now to do that. And so I think now, as we're at this kind of natural end of the construction season, I think now we can see how much progress they've made.
Okay. And I do think, I think the Quest folks in North Dakota can only do as much as the Quest folks in Colorado will let them do. And to some extent, I think a complaint from us raises this to the level of the Quest folks in Colorado. That it's like, fix this. Do what you're supposed to do here, because it's your obligation. And so I think that if they haven't been able to take care of this, I think it's time to rise it to that level so that some of the higher-ups realize that we're serious. Okay, so...
So what does that mean, though? I mean, I still don't see a path forward here. because I hear what you're saying.
I think you guys are hiring an attorney. You're going to do
the attorney on the next meeting.
Yeah.
Well, but it's Randy's portfolio too, so that's my thoughts. And I just, how do you want to proceed?
Well, I think we'll address it at the next meeting.
Okay, fair enough.
At the next regular meeting.
Yeah.
So we got a path.
I'm not talking about scheduling a special meeting for this afternoon now.
Thanks, Randy.
Okay, excellent. Health Department public input meetings on 111D. We were talking about this yesterday in a PUD meeting. Sarah and I were kind of thinking those meetings were coming up, so Vic looked up when they are, and I thought we should throw it out here for discussion on if and how we participate.
So they have meetings set up, Williston, November 9th, Beulah, November 12th, BSC, the 16th, and NDSU on the 18th. They're all at 7 p.m. Central Time.
And where was the last one?
At NDSU in Fargo.
And that was the 20th?
The 18th.
18th. So only one out east?
Right.
Wow.
It's kind of an odd dispersion of locations.
Well, Coal Country, got to do that.
Yeah.
Williston.
Yeah.
So west, Patrick, middle.
Short of power.
Yep.
And then the two largest cities.
Yep, west, central, east, and Coal Country.
Right. And I did put a call into Terry O'Claire to see if they would like us to have someone in attendance for any questions. I haven't got a call back from him. But
do we know what their agenda is at all? Or the format?
I guess he's minister. Yep. I talked to Dave Glott.
Okay.
And told him that we would be discussing this. I didn't know what the commission's position was, but if the commission wasn't going to have someone there, I would be there myself. Mm-hmm. But I felt that it should be at all four meetings because I thought that the points that I think they're looking for that are in our realm have to do with the cost increases and the impact of those cost increases on especially low-income people, because those are the things we deal with in these cases. And so I thought that the people that attend these meetings ought to hear us articulating those points. And he would be fine with that for us to have a voice at each of these meetings. Now, that clearly isn't taking up 30 or 40 minutes of their time, but making that point about the fact that this implementation of this is going to lead to potentially a lessened reliability of the grid, certainly an increased cost, and that those impacts will be very significant and painful to the low-income folks.
What do you know what the format is that he has arranged? Are they doing a presentation followed by public input or what?
I didn't really catch so much the format, only that he agreed to give us some time.
Okay, so then we would be on his agenda, not stepping up as a commenter?
I don't know if he would call us up or if he'd have us sitting at a table or something. I don't know.
Okay. Do you know anything about the format, Vic?
I don't. I've tried to read the stuff that they have out on their website, their news release. And it's just they're just referred to as public meetings. They have the list of issues that the EPA is requiring them to talk about at these sessions, but I don't know if they plan to have a presentation at the beginning to explain what they're talking about. I would assume so. I don't think they're just going to sit there and hope someone asks a question.
But, so they'll do a presentation and then...
I would imagine so.
Well, I guess I'd like to have a feel for if we're part of the presenters, then it almost looks like we're part of the organizers of the meeting and hosts, et cetera.
And, well, I think we had decided some time ago that we didn't want to be that.
Right. So then I think then that would go back to then maybe Terry doesn't have you sitting up there or have you part of the quote-unquote program, but you maybe speak as the sort of like the core.
A very early on person.
Yeah, yeah.
Before everybody else goes, so they don't have to wonder whether we know this and I'll ask that question.
I think that's it. What do you think, Brian?
Oh, boy. I think that if an individual commissioner wants to go, we obviously can't stop us from going, right? But I don't like the idea of the PSC participating as an entity. because we don't have jurisdiction over the whole state. We have jurisdiction over three entities, three investor-owned. So I agree with that, that if we should not be part of the presenters. This is a tough, just a slippery slope. I think we almost have more input in swaying the discussion. We give the health department our comments. We talk to the public about what we're doing, but I wouldn't want us to have a seat at that table.
That's a good point.
Well, just we don't have jurisdiction. We have jurisdiction. You think about who provides power. We have Otter Tail, XL, and MDU. That's who we have jurisdiction over. And all of a sudden, we become the jurisdictional voice of everything. And then PSC says A, and then Basin comes back hypothetically and says, that's not right because our members will be affected differently. And then just Basin and COTA, they're big power entities that have their own plan forward, and we represent a smaller group. So we could talk about what we think the impact investor owns is, but we've not deemed that in future cases. So I think we're better running our way of media attention, public outreach, than getting too wrapped up in this one.
Yeah. You know, the other alternative would be, you mentioned just leaving it up to the folks we regulate to make the points about the impact at the public meetings. It is a really good opportunity to lay out, though, publicly, a whole host of the cost concerns that really nobody else is probably going to
address.
Well,
let me do a flip-flop, though, is that I could also see if we're going to do it, that if we're going to do it, we should have a seat at the table and address and ask for 15 minutes and say, we regulate investor owns, here's what we do, and clarify what it is. So if we do it, then it's got to be clear what we do and don't do. It can't be some in the middle. So, I mean, I can really go either way, but if we're going to do it, we should do it right. And we can't just be somebody stepping up there.
Well, if we have a seat at the table, we're not a controlling seat because this is a governor's agency and we're just not going to be a controlling seat. So I think your initial thought was that that's probably not a good position to be in. I'm not comfortable with just sitting back and saying that the entities that we regulate speak out for us, because I think we regulate them because we're looking out for the consumers, not for them. And in this kind of a case, I think over the course of the next few years, the consumers' interests and the regulated companies' interests aren't necessarily the same. If the regulated companies, as long as they're getting recovery, maybe it doesn't matter. I don't want to say that, but as long as they're getting recovery, they're best interests might not be the same as the consumer's best interests.
When's the first meeting?
You guys have any thoughts?
Tuesday.
The 9th. I would agree. I mean, if there's a question of whether or not we want to kind of wade into this, the value in these things might be minimal. I mean, you think about what kind of attendance could be at this, you know, so when we have our public input sessions for a rate case, you know, we publicize those pretty heavily and we say, this is going to impact your utility bill. And we get one person showing up in Bismarck. And this is across a whole state of people who really don't understand what this even means. I would guess the attendance is going to be about the same, if not less, if there is such a thing. And maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, just kind of, you know, judging what the public's understanding of how this could impact things could be.
Well, the issue
Eula,
then
yeah,
is
Eula,
yeah. There'll be people on both sides who have strong feelings that will come. But the average person who's just curious, no way. It'll be the people who already know how they feel. But the other thing, the way you speak to the people who are just learning about it is through the media who come in and report on it. And that's where they would likely cover something from another statewide agency that has a role. So, you know, Randy's comments would likely get picked up in some way, shape, or form in those articles. So it is a big strategic question on, you know, what we do and how we do it. Yeah. Well, do we want to think about it?
I'd go back.
It's next week.
I think we're both gone. I mean.
Yeah, so I, yeah.
You know, we can, you don't have to, no plan survives the initial assault. Rancher, can you make November 9th?
Yeah, I can make all four of them and intend to.
Plan to go out there for the first one, and be right up then. If I'm Randy Crispin, PSC, and say your thoughts, and then come back and say that worked good or it doesn't work good. Then we'll adjust.
Okay.
All right. We're not going to ask for if you're going to try to be the first speaker.
Well, I'm among the first speakers. Yeah. I don't know if they have the governor coming or they might.
Well, he would be hosting.
Among the first.
Right. Yeah. All right. Very good. I'm comfortable with that.
I'll be speaking for myself then.
Well, I feel comfortable. You can speak for me too.
Anything that was included in that letter, and we've all signed off on that petition.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So if you're sticking to that same sort of
talking
thing.
Points,
so. Yeah.
Okay.
I just wanted to bring you guys up to speed on some stuff before we do it on the rail safety program.
Notice we have bring us up to speed before we do it, Rancher. We have no say.
You do have a say. It hasn't gone out.
We've lost control here.
You do have a say. So in your
packet.
In your packet, you have a draft letter. We have also, Daryl has worked on a program description for the rail safety program. It outlines the mission, the goals, and some of our strategies. It's pretty basic, but it just provides some guidance and some parameters for what the program is and how we're going to run the program, our goals and philosophy. We are hoping to invite the stakeholders, mostly the railroads, probably the union folks, into the office to just tell them, here's what the program is, here's our philosophy, here's Daryl, here's Carl, here's who's involved. Just a meeting to discuss this this new initiative and just kind of, you know, have some commentary with them about what their concerns might be. And, you know, really the idea is to get them sort of on board with us and assure them that this isn't a gotcha type of program. We're going to be out there holding them accountable for the standards that they're supposed to be meeting, but at the same time, we're trying to work with them to improve the safety culture. So, one, I wanted you to be aware that that's a meeting that I'm planning to organize. If you have any concerns with that, let me know. If you want to be there, let me know. If you want to have it be a commission-wide meeting, I'd be happy to do that if you guys want to be a part of it. But we've set up tentatively the 19th of November at 1 o'clock for that meeting. So that's the first item and more critical. This is a work in progress, the description of and I actually haven't even finished working on it, so I can get you an updated version of this that you can, you know, edit at your will. But this is just kind of to show you sort of the path we're going down.
Is it appropriate to comment now, Madam?
Absolutely. Please do.
No, I think that's great. If when you schedule the meeting, I'd be happy to attend if it works.
Okay.
I think that's just the more awareness, the better. And I just did a quick preview of this letter. I thought it was a really good start. I would just think we need to be a little bit careful when we talk about hazardous, non-hazardous, and all that. Just like that first paragraph, it's really good. At the same time, type of material has changed from largely coal and grain to large volumes of material such as crude oil and ethanol. I think non-hazardous has so many different definitions that it's probably best to just talk about the product change instead of – because coal can be defined hazardous and maybe it can't be. I mean, it's just – that's just a dangerous road to go down, I think. I think you can make your point without that word.
Yeah. That's just so you we've had that discussion before on this whole issue too, and the industry, as in Ron Ness, doesn't object to hazardous because he readily agrees this stuff is flammable. That's why it's valuable. That's the whole point of it. So they don't object to it being called a hazardous material because that's how it's categorized by these agencies. So that's why I've been using that all along.
Well, that's fine. Maybe just I wouldn't say call coal and grain non-hazardous. I mean, there's no such term as non-hazardous.
Sure.
So if you want to do hazardous, I think what really stuck out to me is that non-hazardous is not a term anywhere. It's either hazardous or it's not.
Are you a dictionarian or what?
No, I just been a lot of, I don't even know what's that word again yesterday?
Carrion?
Carrion. I didn't know what that meant. I just know I've had a lot of litigation in my marine life about hazardous and materials, so it's best to...
There's nothing that isn't hazardous.
Well.
Okay.
I wouldn't have caught that, but that is a good point. And so when you remove non-hazardous, maybe you want to put more hazardous, because on the next one. No, because I'm reflecting back to a bill we had in the legislature one time on what could be in trucks without having them cleansed first before grain was hauled. And I think in some realms, coal is considered a hazardous material.
Sure it is.
And
flammable,
that's not what
corrosive.
We're right. looking at. So you might want to just say explosive. More hazardous, like oil. And
right, sure.
But that's what I was thinking of, is the placards and the four criteria of hazardous, and coal can be classified that way. And
right. Okay.
But the intent is great. I like what you're doing, and that's just a happy to glad thing. Then.
For sure. And we'll get you a final one to look at. And you can comment and don't feel like you have to make any input on that now, because I'll get you one for you to review at your leisure. All right. Any issues with the meeting?
No, I don't know.
Okay. The 19th.
The date.
It's that letter. The 19th is the
So I presume
date.
We didn't
you have a date.
Schedule
I must
that
miss
date.
That.
No, there was nothing on my calendar. If you guys want to come, you
when
can.
It,
it's the 19th,
of
November 19th.
What time?
1:00.
Oh, yes. I'd be happy to attend.
Yeah, I think it looks good for me, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Will you have your deer by then already?
All right, then the final one, Jack, Roulette Power Development, LLC.
Oh, yeah, I just want to bring it to the commission's attention that after the hearing and the record closed, there was a gentleman who stopped by and dropped off some information of a possible eagle's nest that wasn't listed at the hearing. I did have an opportunity to speak with the gentleman, and he did say he didn't want to formally request to put it in the record. But
he did not want to?
Right. He would not be writing in to request to put it into the record, but I did want to put the commission on notice of that for their consideration, and that it is a different eagle's nest than what was at the hearing.
And it's active or non-active?
That is information that I don't have.
What I told Jack is that I thought it appropriate to just queue it up today, but we'll get that work session scheduled. And, you know, my thoughts are is that there, you know, we could approve this and eagle's nest could drop in tomorrow. So
we've
had our hearing, and we'll maybe put some provisions in there that says the company will do something once a year to certify, but my thought is to get into the work session and make a decision here.
And it does appear that it's about 2 miles or more away from the nearest turbine, from my estimate.
Okay.
As it is, but.
Sounds good to me. Randy, any thoughts?
Good.
Okay. Excellent. Now to the final matter. Was there any other discussion matters?
There's more. You must have added, Commissioner.
Nope. Now down to the admin.
Oh, sure.
I mean scheduling. The torture section of the meeting.
See, Julie Prescott did the right thing by withdrawing. Good work.
Yay, Julie. Cross off number 2. Let's see here. I'm just looking at the order here. So do you want to do the work session number 5 first, since that's sort of immediate, I'm assuming?
When do you have an order, Jack?
I should be able to have an order ready by the work session, probably early next week, or maybe even by the end of the week.
So if we're looking at next week, the 12th and 13th would have to be for me, because I'll be at Nayrook from the 9th, 10th, and back on the 11th, but not in time for a meeting.
Yep. Wow. You know, the 16th, I've got a pretty open schedule. 12th and 13th are pretty full.
Yeah, 16th looks open for me, too. Pretty open.
Vic, we got that one call meeting at 10. Vic left. That's all I got is a conflict at 10.
7 in the afternoon, then.
1:30?
Okay. Sure.
This is a roulette.
Yep, number 5. 1:30 on the 16th.
Okay. And then we can maybe have a vote on the 18th.
Sounds good. Okay. Then let's look at this work session 2, Julie, number 6. and number one. Should we do that work session for number one the same time or right after the roulette one, Jerry? Linda?
I think that works.
Is there an order already?
We have a proposed order.
Okay, good. Does that work for you guys?
Absolutely.
The 16th then at 2:30? Is it going to take us a full hour for that roulette wind farm?
We could notice them both at 1:30.
Okay. I think that's good because I don't know that we'd spend an hour talking through the Eagle stuff.
I think so.
1:30.
Is that the same attorney? I'm trying to remember who was counsel on Lindahl.
Jack.
That was Brian Schmidt on Lindahl, and I'm on the roulette.
Yeah. And what about for the wind farms?
The roulette.
Was Molly wind? Both of those?
Oh, Molly, yes. Yeah. That's correct.
So she'd be here anyway.
Or on phone.
We don't need Molly. It's our work session.
But doesn't she usually come to them?
Mm-mm.
When they're hers?
She calls.
Does she call? Okay.
I think she drops in. She eavesdrops. Which we
Charlie's
like.
She's dropping
we
right
encouraging,
now.
We encourage this.
Okay, so we're just going to schedule them back to back, November 16th at 1:30, right?
Yeah.
Just a thought, but yeah.
All right. So that'll be a win day. Okay, Julie. Sakakawea Pipeline. Is this the one where we're waiting for information back regarding the tribal issues? Yeah.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yes, and there were other issues as well.
Number six.
We had asked about some information about the ICBM issue.
Oh, right.
And I did receive an email this morning from Danny Krause, and she indicated that they should have response to most of the issues that we raised. There is still an outstanding waiver issue, but we could go forward with scheduling a work session and we would have something to bring to you.
Okay. So. All right, excellent. So do we want to look at the 17th?
I have access to Zach's calendar here, so I'll tell you if he's going to be available. Zach would be available for the morning and part of the
17th?
Afternoon. Yes.
Should we say 10? Does that work for you guys?
Works for me.
Is he available after the our afternoon meeting, like at 2:30?
He's showing between 1 and 5. He's available on the 17th.
Let's make it at 2:30. So that works for you guys.
That's fine. That's
or 3 or however much time you think. I don't know how long that meeting.
Well, if 1 hour, if we can't do that's. I don't like scheduling more than an hour.
Okay.
Well, I'm at League Night Research Council, so I probably wouldn't, because I'll have to drive back. I probably wouldn't make it back till 3 then. So maybe we better do it in the morning.
Okay.
What time did you say?
10.
Yeah.
Just to keep them all straight, that's not our allotted land discussion one, is it?
Yes.
It is. Okay. Yes. All right.
Okay, 10 a.m. Number 6 is going to be 10 a.m. on the 17th. All right. So now that brings us to the informal hearing, Northern States Power Company light emitting diode streetlight rate petition tariff.
That will be on the 18th.
Yeah, those are usually, you guys just usually pick the date for the informal, so that's fine.
It's the regular schedule informal for the 18th.
All right. Can we get those? This brings up something that is helpful. When we have informals scheduled, actually, like, there is going to be something on informal, can we have that added to the calendar so there's a case number there as soon as it's known that we're going to do it? Because it's really, because we often don't do those. I have gotten kind of in the habit of when I don't see a number there, I assume we're not having one. And then I look at scheduling other things at that time. So just as soon as staff knows that you're going to do an informal on one of those informal times that are regularly scheduled, get it to Esther so she can put the numbers, the case numbers on it so we know there's going to be one.
Like today we have one, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't show on our calendar.
It doesn't show his flag because I had the same question. It's like... So as soon as staff gets it, to put it out there is
yep.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So the 18th.
18th.
And we suspended those rates. There was no request for formal, so that should be fine then. There was no pending request for informal. We just did that motion, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so that brings us to the hearing on New Star at NDSU. So Professor Kalk can show his
I prefer extraordinaire.
You know, I just don't want this to be missed. Do we? You drive by there all the time, and once I get much past Valley City, I think I start thinking I'm almost in Fargo. So I don't think about the mileage difference, but for the people who actually are impacted by this the most that live out there at Mapleton, how far is that to NDSU in time?
18 miles.
18. And so it's probably, you know, there's parking issues, traffic issues. Are we inconveniencing them in order to make
whatever you guys want is fine.
Students? I don't know.
Just like the argument we had about the power line hearing, but that went into Grand Forks. I'm okay with whatever you want, Randy.
I don't know of a location out there either, and it is in the county.
Because we had looked at West Fargo, Daryl said, and if we're going to come to West Fargo, we might as well go into SU. I mean, you come right across in 12th Avenue, you're right there. Because there really wasn't a good venue in Mapleton.
There isn't a venue in Mapleton. Well, there probably isn't Castleton. That's even closer. How far is Mapleton?
It's not my port. I just wanted to throw it out. I'm fine.
Right, but it's closer to Mapleton than Fargo, probably.
I can't think of anything in Castleton. Well, no, there's the county building and things like that.
There's plenty in Castleton we could look at, too.
We're going to be flying. Yeah, I was just going to say, we're going to probably fly into Fargo. Yeah. So we'd be flying into Fargo. We're a mile away from campus. If we fly into Fargo, then we go back the other way, driving ourselves.
I think that it's not very often we have stuff in Fargo. And I originally was with you. In fact, when he first said it, I was like, oh, that's a long ways from Mapleton. But that said, it's not very often we get to Fargo. It's a good opportunity for students to learn. And we're a lot closer in Fargo than we would be in Bismarck. You know, I mean, so we've come a long ways. It's not... trying to think if I'm a person in Mapleton who's would I be irritated to go to Fargo for a hearing on it? I don't think I would think about it.
Is there a facility there we can use that's not too hard of campus, but on campus that, you know, where parking's not going to be too bad of a problem for them?
That is the biggest challenge. It's a pain to park at NDSU. It's intimidating to even go on there.
Your point is correct, valid. There's the Alumni Center, but there's nowhere on campus that's not a parking problem. Yeah, there is, but there's no parking there. You pay to park. I mean, there's parking, but you got to pay to park.
Does Alumni Center have parking?
Not enough. It has parking probably 20 spots.
Which is, I don't know, is that enough?
Are they, like when you go to the Alumni Center, do you think, I'll park there? Or yes, is it like all the staff are already parked there?
All the staff are already parked there.
Okay. Now, there you go.
Yeah, there's in the dome, there's those three rooms, second level, that there's all kinds of parking there.
Would you get kids to go from the campus over to the dome?
Probably not.
Yeah.
So that's what defeats the purpose. Then.
Yeah.
Right.
Madam Chair, I'll let you figure this out. Whatever you want is fine with Daryl.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about it. Okay. So let's pick the date.
Pick the date.
That's what we all need to do anyways. What are we looking at, Julie?
First available date would be January 5th.
Wait a minute.
2016.
We got no time before then.
I have consulted with the company's attorney, the judge, all the parties and with the holidays.
The company's okay with it?
Yes.
Okay. Then let's just do it because, you know, between now and then, our dates are pretty limited too. Okay.
The 5th?
The 5th is the first option?
Yes.
Oh, I'll be in. Yeah, I'm tied up that day.
I knew because I knew we had a conflict from before. That's why. Because we had the commission meeting that day and we moved it to the 6th because we had conflicts.
That week doesn't work, actually, I don't think. We've got the rest of that week.
And quite honestly, the kids aren't even there yet if we're thinking about SU.
Yeah.
Be plenty of parking, though. Just saying. Okay.
All right, January. What else, Julie?
The next available after that would be the 21st.
Oh, come on.
Yes.
All right.
We've got a bit. This is back to that whole judge and attorney. I you know what I'm going to say, JP?
It's a healthy mix of everybody's schedule.
Not the commissioner.
Go with the 21st. Yeah. Are you available?
I guess so, Madam Chair.
Okay. Sold. Are you available?
I have to add one more scheduling thing I just remembered.
All right.
Good thing we spent this much time.
Okay, the 21st, January 21st, we'll pick a date or a location.
9 a.m.?
We'll decide that after we pick the location.
Kids don't get up too early, so we got to think about that too.
All right, we have to do a work session on winter construction. That's number 7, and number 8 is yours, Randy.
I thought the railroad meeting was number 7.
No, the railroad meeting is scheduled. It's the 19th.
Okay.
So the winter construction, maybe we could piggyback that discussion onto the 17th. November 17th, the Sakakawea Pipeline. We did that 10 a.m. one. I don't think the winter construction will take real long. I think we would need maybe a half an hour. Maybe we could do it from 11 to 11:30. What time do you leave to the league night thing, Randy?
It's not till after lunch. Okay. So we could do it at, what time 11? Did we schedule the other thing? At 10?
10.
We could do it at 11.
Does that work for you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, 17th at 11. Okay, and then your scheduling item, Randy, is?
We've had that telco breakfast in the past up at Dakota Carrier Network. Held the last one before. I think it was elsewhere. But I discussed with them the morning of January 19th. I think it was 8 o'clock, but I'd have to get back to you on the time. But is that all right?
Yep.
DCN on January 19th?
And there's plenty of parking up there, right?
There's plenty of parking. I don't remember who from staff goes to that, but there was some staff
pretty
that
much
always
everybody.
Comes.
Everybody, yeah.
Anybody? That was the first time we met
Jack
and realized it was Jack, not John.
It was at that venue, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so January 19th it is. Thank you.
I have a point of notification if you're interested when you're all done.
All righty. What is your point of notification?
I scheduled a meeting with OptiSense Pipeline Safety People on November 23rd at 10 a.m. If you don't mind, I'll just notice it, and if you two want to stop by. So it's OptiSense, OptaSense Pipeline.
Are they from Dickinson?
They're all over the place. They've got some fiber optic cable they can lay in the ground. They're working with the guard on perimeter security, and they're doing all kinds of stuff, and they want to come talk about it. And I said, sure. So 23rd at 10 a.m. if anybody wants to come.
What was the date again? 20.
November 23rd at 10 a.m.
Where is it at?
Right here. They're going to do a PowerPoint presentation, and they're working with the guard, and they're working with other pipeline companies, but they just want to show to us what they do.
Good. All right. If there's nothing else from anybody, my colleagues, then we are adjourned.